There's growing international interest into what is without question the yuckiest therapy known to medicine. Fecal transplants. Yes, giving one person's poo to another to treat a variety of medical conditions. But important findings from a British-Australian collaboration could, you'll be pleased to hear, make fecal transplants a thing of the past. Sam Forster is at the Hudson Institute in Melbourne. Welcome to the Health Report, Sam.
Thank you.
What's wrong with fecal transplants? I mean, they're pretty unpleasant ideas, but it seems to make sense. Rather than doing all this research, you just bung in the faeces from somebody that you know is reasonably healthy or thin or doesn't have ulcerative colitis.
Yeah, I mean, certainly we've actually known about it for a very long time. In the 1950s, people were first starting to use it. But the problem really is around standardisation. We know the basic composition, but the problem is there's risks. Even bacteria that are fine in a healthy individual may cause disease through opportunistic pathogens in an individual that's maybe microbiota compromised or immunocompromised.
So when you say opportunistic pathogens, you're talking about you might be down, your immune system's down, and a bug that might not affect somebody who's healthy takes advantage of that situation.
Exactly. The bacteria are designed to colonize and grow effectively, and sometimes if you don't have the proper controls in place because the immune system is compromised, they might expand too much and that would cause disease.
Such as if you're just post-antibiotics and you've got very few bugs left in your microbiome.
Exactly. So it's termed colonization resistance, where you have a strong community that's actually able to resist infection by potential pathogens such as Clostridium difficile. You could think of it like a rainforest. If you're trying to introduce a new species into the rainforest, it's a very complex community, so the likelihood of there being a space in that community that a new organism can occupy is actually quite low. If you clear cut a forest, suddenly there's lots of space and other weeds and things can access very easily.
So I interrupted you when you were going on to talk about the problems of fecal transplants, is that you may get this opportunistic infection without realising the risk.
The problem really is the unknown unknown. So we just don't know what the risks might be. There's hundreds or thousands of species within the microbiota, and for the vast majority of them, we don't know in which conditions they're health associated or in which conditions they might cause disease.
And so your problem, Sam Forster, was that you couldn't actually grow these bugs outside the bowel and therefore study them to know what's going on.
Exactly. We just couldn't understand how to grow them in a laboratory. And if you can't grow them in the laboratory, you can't understand the functional characteristics of them, or even go anywhere further than just a correlation type analysis.
So what was the scientific challenge here?
For many years now, we've known that bacteria live throughout our bodies. They keep us healthy. Sometimes the communities get degraded and cause disease, but fundamentally it's about keeping us healthy. And we've been able to measure them with sequencing-based technologies, so we can look at the DNA, understand the composition, but we've never actually been able to get large numbers of these bacteria and grow them in the laboratory.
Why is that?
It's just there's issues because they're very oxygen sensitive and also they just have very specific nutritional requirements that it's difficult to maintain in a laboratory.
So they're comfortable in the bowel and you can't recreate that easily in the laboratory.
Yes, that's exactly right. And for some bacteria, they can be grown, but for the vast majority, it's a very difficult challenge.
So if you're going to develop probiotics that are true to life, if you like, it's very hard because you can't grow them up.
Yeah, so the idea is we will be able to grow them in a laboratory condition, but then actually these bacteria have to be able to move between individuals. So they produce spores, which are like bacterial seeds that are very resilient. So hopefully we'll be able to generate these spores in the laboratory and then use them to pass to another individual, just like they would in the natural environment.
So we're jumping ahead a little bit to the results of your research. What did you do in this study in terms that mere mortals would understand?
Well, basically what we've done is we've worked out a way to grow these bacteria in the lab. By growing them, it allows us to understand their biology. It allows us to sequence their genomes. It allows us to look at the genes in those genomes and start to predict what they might be doing that influences our health and the community structures within our gut.
So how have you managed to grow them when it's been so difficult?
A lot of time and a lot of hard work is the short answer. It's a case of there's been a dogma in the field for a very long time now that the gut microbiota is unculturable. And so it's just been a case of going through the process and working out all the nutritional requirements and we just got very lucky.
So you've managed to isolate about 140 different families of bacteria from the bowel when there's about 1,000 or so or even more there. We don't really know, do we?
No, so we don't really have any idea how many species there are within the bowel. Somewhere between a few hundred and 1,000 are our best estimate. In this study, we've actually only looked at 6 individuals, though. So 137 species from 6 individuals is actually quite a good representation. Remembering that although there's a lot of species in there, the majority of them are actually at quite low levels. What we're able to select from a plate are the dominant species. And to actually get all of them, we would be picking millions of bacterial colonies, which obviously is infeasible.
So you basically took this from their poo, did you?
Yeah, so that's how the research is done. The fecal samples are isolated and then plated, and the colonies are then picked and the bacteria purified.
So you've then gone on and sequenced the genes and the DNA in these bacteria. What have you learned that we didn't know?
The major finding that we've had, other than this massive discovery of novel species, so we've got 45 novel species, 20 novel genera, and 2 novel families. What we've really been able to look at...
So basically, you've discovered bacteria that have never been known to humans before.
Exactly right. And I mean, when you think about it, it's quite incredible. You know, these species are with us every day of our lives. Even our ancestors, when we left Africa, probably there were ancestors of these bacteria traveling with them as we colonized the world. And it's only now with the technologies that we have that we're actually able to sequence them, isolate them, and understand what they're doing, how they're helping us. I mean, from that perspective, it's actually amazing that we can even do it.
It's incredible. And what else have you found? So you find these novel species. Have they got particular properties, or that's yet to be discovered?
I mean, it's very early stages now. One of the very interesting things that we found was actually the number of these species that can form spores.
You better explain what spores are. People have got a kind of a notion of spores flying through the air from trees or plants, but what are bacterial spores?
So these bacterial spores, they're similar to seeds from a tree, but they typically stick to surfaces, and they're designed really to survive for long periods of time. So in the laboratory environment, for example, we actually store these spores in ethanol and put them in the minus 80 freezer, and they're stable for years. And it's only then when you put them back into an environment where it's desirable for them to grow that they'll actually germinate and grow into normal, healthy bacteria.
And you think it's these spores that could form, you know, the pill, if you like, that could replace fecal implants?
Well, potentially. I mean, I think it's still at very early stages with the research. We might be able to develop coatings that create an anaerobic environment within the pill so that the spores are not necessary. For some diseases, it's only about a third of the bacteria that forms spores. So if we need to introduce other bacteria, the spores obviously won't necessarily be the best approach, but it is one option.
So this is remarkable. And where to next for this?
Well, so now we're at the beginning, really. We have the bacteria. So up until now, it was all about understanding correlations between disease and the bacterial occurrence. So we could say, if you have a particular disease, you're more likely to have a particular bacteria or a particular bacterial community. What we can do now is we can start to understand whether having the bacteria is causing the disease or whether it's just a result of the disease. And by doing that, we can then start to identify the key candidates. Obviously, it's still a very difficult task. There's millions of combinations just from these 130 bacteria that we've identified. But computationally, we now have the genomes, we have the sequencing data from diseased and healthy individuals, and we can start to understand the potential candidates and then test them in the laboratory.
And 25 years from now, the current probiotics on the market will look pretty primitive.
Well, it's interesting. The current probiotics, the idea is actually not to colonize a patient. So they typically are designed to induce an immune response, but then be passed through and not maintained within the microbiota. For these therapeutics, you'd actually be really looking to replace the existing bacteria. So, for example, in a Clostridium difficile infection, where it's usually a patient who's undergone an antibiotic treatment, destroyed a lot of their natural microbiota, what you want to do is you want to replace that natural microbiota and maintain it within the patient so that you prevent this Clostridium difficile infection.
So this is the springboard everybody's been looking for?
That's what we hope. We're still obviously very early stages, But I would envisage within the next few years we will start to see clinical trials of these rationally selected combinations of bacteria, and then hopefully that move to the clinic very quickly after that.
Sam, thank you very much for joining us on the Health Report.
Thank you.
Dr. Sam Forster is at the Hudson Institute of Medical Research in Melbourne and the Sanger Institute in Cambridge.
Want to hear about the best party in town this election season? It's a new podcast with me, Frank Kelly.
And me, Patricia Carvelis.
The Party Room, your essential guide to this federal election. Subscribe now. Simply search for The Party Room in your podcast app.
Or listen via the RN website, abc.net.au/RN.